You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. That's 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 466 of the Columbia Calling podcast. This week's very special guest is Daniela Galán. She is an artist and art historian based in London, England. And also, she's got an interesting family story. Those of you who are aware or know anything of Colombian politics and Colombian social history, you'll know that the Galán surname is, well, politically important. And we'll be going into that a little bit and how it relates to art, how it relates to the evolution of Colombian contemporary art and indeed Latin American contemporary art. Because on this episode, we're going to be discussing also the online courses, the art courses, art history courses offered by Daniela Galán and her Amalgama exhibition, which is now, well, it's rebranded to become more of like an art entirety. So look up artamalgama.com and we'll be talking about this all the way through segment three of the show. And it is truly fascinating to get a look at the politics, art, and an ability and a possibility of studying art history online, pre-recorded, of course, but you know there are various different tiers to what you can sign up for. And I've had a look myself, and they're not expensive. And for those who are interested, well, you'll have to listen all the way to the end because there is a special code that's a discount for all Columbia Calling listeners. So there you go. A little kickback from Daniela Galán to help any of the listeners out there of Columbia Calling want to sign up to this courses, because they're very varied and very interesting indeed. I highly recommend them. Artamalgama.com. Check through for courses, and then at checkout, put in the code that we reveal at the end of segment three. I hope you've been enjoying recent weeks. This last week with David Restrepo talking about the history of coca prohibition was incredibly informative, I think you'll find. And how many of you have signed up to listen to the new Latin News podcast, which I am hosting and talking about all sorts of issues from across the region? We've just recorded episode 3, which will be out next week, and it's about Lula in Brazil, Lula 3.0. Previous to this, we've had talked about Boric in Chile, and previous to that, we've talked about the ongoing political crisis in Peru. So interesting topics. And then the one after Brazil is going to be Paraguay, because we'll be on the other side of the Paraguayan presidential election. So we'll be discussing that with an expert on the region and on that area. So quite exciting. Lots of podcasts going on from my end. But this is episode 466. And I'll leave you in the capable hands of Emily Hart and the news segment. That's the Columbia News Brief. Thank you again to everyone out there who continues to sponsor us on Patreon. You can do so at www.patreon.com/Columbia Calling and throw a couple of dollars our way. So thank you again. And of course, support our sponsors, latinnews.com and bnbcolombia.com. And now over to Emily with the news. The Columbia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Columbia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Colombia Calling website, that's www.colombiacalling.co, or the BNB Colombia Tours website, that's www.bnbcolombia.com, and they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolombia.com and latinnews.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.
I'm Emily Hart, and these are your top stories for the week of April 24th, 2023. FARC dissident group, the Segunda Marca Italia, have announced the re-establishment of the 53rd Front, which will reportedly have presence in Cundinamarca, Meta, and Alto Vichada. The announcement was made on the Segunda Marca Italia's website, where they also announced willingness to work with guerrilla group the ELN, the Ejército de Liberación Nacional. Regional security councils have been set up in those areas, now with raised alert levels. US President Joe Biden and Colombian President Gustavo Petro met in the White House last week, discussing an integrated green economy across the Americas, including a regional energy network, as well as proposing to promote elections with guarantees in Venezuela and the gradual removal of sanctions. Drug trafficking was also a major issue in discussion. Petro, at the end of the visit, said that he has asked for support in the form of boats and drones. Also, while in the US, Petro addressed the Organization of American States, proposing to reintegrate Venezuela into the Inter-American human rights system. He also suggested Cuba might be brought into discussions regarding re-entry. In Colombia, a conference will be held this week to discuss Venezuela, with representatives from the US and various Latin American countries, as well as European ones. Venezuelan opposition figure Juan Guaido has also arrived in Colombia, hoping to reopen negotiations with the government of Nicolás Maduro. The Nevada del Ruiz volcano, which sits between Tolima and Caldas, has registered another increase in gas and ash emissions, though the alert level remains orange. Many in the threat zone have no access to communications technology or signal, and the Ministry of Information Technology and Communications is trying to contract a satellite to maintain those people connected. Authorities are also looking to evacuate children from the area as a precautionary measure. However, many families are unwilling to leave their animals and farms in order to evacuate for fear of losses in productivity and harvest. Major oil pipeline, the Cano Limón Covenas, has suspended operations after a ninth attack this year, damaging their infrastructure in Arauca on the border with Venezuela. An emergency plan is being implemented to minimize the oil spill caused by the bombing. The military is reportedly trying to secure the area. Senet, the oil transportation company, has not identified a perpetrator for the attacks, but the ELN and FARC dissidents are both active in the area. More than half of Colombians consider themselves to be poor, says the National Statistics Agency, 6 million more than before the pandemic. The regional variation is marked, with 83% of those in Chocó answering the survey that they consider themselves poor, and 86% in Vichada. Despite this, according to the same survey, on average people in Colombia rated their level of satisfaction with life at 7.9 out of 10. Colombia is among the most polarized countries in the world, according to the newest Edelman Trust barometer. Globally, only Argentina is categorized as more polarized than Colombia. Colombians generally answered the survey that polarization is worse than ever, and that foreign governments and the wealthy elite exacerbate the divisions. Countries like Canada, Germany, and the Netherlands are categorized as intermediate regarding polarization. Countries like China and Saudi Arabia are considered the least polarized. In Colombia, only 40% of the population answered that they trust the government. Only 38% trust the media. 68%, meanwhile, trust companies. Since last year's survey, economic optimism has dropped by over 20%. Brazil, Mexico, Colombia, and Argentina have all seen deteriorations in trust in political leadership. In Argentina, currently only 20% of the population trusts the government. Those were your top stories for this week. Thanks for listening.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling, episode 466. It's the 10th year of the Columbia Calling podcast. Who can believe that? We've been going for 10 years. And I think we've been maturing over those 10 years. So anyway, I'm very happy to introduce our guest. She's been on the show before a few years ago. I think it was pre-COVID. Is that even another? It's another period of our lives. Daniela Galán, she's an art historian. She's in London. She and Jane Solomon, a friend of mine, and of course works with Daniela, launched a great, I would say, amalgama. It was a exhibition and other things, but she'll talk about that. And we're going to talk about the evolution of Colombian art. We're going to talk about her name, Galán, and we're going to talk about a bit about everything. And there's also an art history course that she's offering. And for listeners of Columbia Calling, there will be a discount, but you'll have to listen to the end of the podcast to get that. So Daniela, welcome back on the Columbia Calling podcast. Oh, it's a real pleasure. It's a pleasure. Thank you for being so prompt and saying, I want to be on the podcast. I've got something to share. It's always exciting to be able to promote other people and what they're doing. So let's start with Amalgama. Let's go back, because it was pre-COVID, right? It was
pre-COVID.
And what was it?
So originally it was an exhibition to promote female artists from Latin America here in the UK.
Yeah.
But then after the exhibition ended, I asked myself, what am I doing? This cannot stop in an exhibition. Mm. Our mission was to promote the work of female artists from Latin America and the UK and to reduce the gender gap within the art industry. And I never realized that the gender gap within the art industry was that big. I never realized that. I never realized that, for example, women earn 50% less than men. 50% less, which is ridiculous. Or more, you know, if you think about the most expensive work by a living female artist, that was Jenny Saville. And she sold by, I don't know, $9 million? I don't know. I don't know exactly the number. But if you compare it to Jeff Koons, who sold $90 million, the difference is outstanding. So there's a lot of efforts to be done in order to reduce that gender gap. And unfortunately, in Latin America, we are like the bottom of the low, because in a way, not even men are known. And so if you don't even know the male artists, well, women artists are like completely a mystery. And the more I research, the more I become passionate about their work, because it's outstanding. And it's something that I feel in all the bottom of my heart, everybody not only should know about, but will love and will be completely mesmerized by their groundbreaking proposals. And this is why we're doing what we're doing. Wow. Exhibiting, showcasing them, teaching about them, everything we can do so everybody could fall in love as much as we have.
Well, there are some phenomenal artists out there. And now the exhibition that I saw last summer in London, was that part of Amalgama as well?
Yes, exactly. So since the first exhibition, we have been committing ourselves to exhibit as much as we can artists here in London. So we tend to do open calls in order to have like a less biased perspective. Mm-hmm. And we get jurors in order to help us select the artists that we will exhibit here. We have also done exhibitions by renowned artists, but our main focus right now is also helping emergent artists to exhibit here in the UK, because we know how difficult it is to cross worlds and travel from Latin America to Europe in order to exhibit what works. So the last exhibition that you saw was our last open call, where 7 artists were selected and we exhibit their work here in Piccadilly Circus, which was a prime location. It was really, really good. So yeah,
Yeah, I remember the building. It used to be a bank, wasn't it? Was it a bank?
It was Barclays. Yes, yeah, it was exactly. A Barclays.
See, I'm a Londoner.
Absolutely. I remember that bank as well. Yeah. It was alive when I arrived, but I think COVID destroyed it. So,
well, for your benefit. And, I don't lament the loss of a bank for an art gallery and an exhibition. No. I think that's a positive.
Absolutely.
But that's great. And I remember some of the artwork because I then went to Barcú, I think it was Barcú, here in Bogota, and there was the artwork. And I looked so well versed and learned because I said, I saw these in London.
And so yeah, because like that exhibition was a collaboration that we did with Barcú as well. And the idea was to showcase like the work in London and in Bogota. Yeah. So the exhibition travel and exhibited in Barcú. Mm. And it was brilliant because we had two Colombian artists there, but also two women from Cuba, one from Chile, one from Mexico, one from Argentina. So it was quite... Mm. diverse the type of artists exhibited, also the medium, because we had video, we had sculptures, we had photography, we had painting. So it was a vast range of artists exhibited, and our idea is to continue to do the same. So eventually we will launch another open call probably by the end of this year, so we can continue to
you're busy Amalgama, young baby, you know, married, doing all this. And of course, we're going to get into it, the online courses as well. But we know, I mean, it's great. I also want to just indicate the art that I most like was kind of, it was, there was sort of the jungle pictures, but then with like a triangle cut out with a different black and white picture. Or was it black and white with a triangle cut out with some color? Something
so basically,
like,
yeah, that was the photographs, yes, of an Argentinian artist called, yeah, Andrea Alcalay.
Yeah.
And what she did was brilliant. It was beautiful. She takes a picture of a landscape, and then she uses the color, the RGB color of that landscape, transforms, and then she juxtaposes both images. So on the one side, you see the landscape, but in black and white, and then she makes a cut. And she shows you the color of the landscape, but as a coding, as a computer code.
That's it.
So in a way, you read that computer language and the landscape juxtaposed with one another, making a beautiful composition. It's beautiful. So
yeah, there was one was like, it was jungle. I think there was another one that was like mangrove. And those really appealed to me. I was like, unfortunately, I wasn't flush with cash at the moment to be able to. But maybe someday in the future. I mean, you know.
Absolutely.
We can but dream. But I'm quite excited about this. I'm excited not only talking to you because you talk with such emotion and such, I don't know, as we'd say in Spanish, apropiación, belonging to this. And you know, when we see things like the Feria del Millón here in Bogota, Barcú, now, you know, when it sets up in the houses in the Candelaria, so it brings people who wouldn't traditionally come down to that area. And of course, Arbo goes without saying, although I think Arbo is out of control in terms of prices. And yeah. I would like to say it's a little bit pretentious, so I like the other ones, but the Feria del Millón is my favorite because really seeing the up-and-coming artists, and we usually pick up some. I've picked up something by Alirio Cruz, who did 3D photography. I picked up something by Daniel Rueda, and also something by Wilmer Useche, I want to say, which is a very sort of almost like algorithms, I would say, and things. And of course, we know personally, I can't even remember his name, Danilo Rojas, I want to see. Yeah, and he's stayed at our place in Montpós. And I'm, you know, so these artists are accessible. And I think that's what's so exciting about it. And to go there into like the Feria del Millón and talk to them and have them explain to you what's going on. And I feel that's what you're doing a lot, not only with Amalgama and the female art world and all this, but I think this comes, you know, from your background as well as an artist. I mean, I know for a fact that you graduated as a lawyer and you made what could
quantum
be,
jump
described in many circles as the right decision to go into art and art history, where you look very happy and you sound very happy. So there you go. But let's talk about your surname, because that's something that obviously is hanging over you, and it hung over you as an artist. Galán. Now, for those of you out there who are not familiar with the name Galán, maybe Daniela, you could tell us.
Well, basically, yeah. And oddly enough, I did an artwork about it. And we were discussing about this artwork before, because it's an artwork called The Weight of the Name. For those who don't know, my family has a lot of history, actually. Beautiful history, outstanding history. And it comes from even someone that was sort of related to our family. I don't know if it's the same family lineage, which is José Antonio Galán, who was part of the independence fight against the Spanish. So it's way back. But then in the middle of the 20th century, there comes my grandfather and my uncle. My grandfather, the founder of the La UIS, which is a very famous university in Santander. And then he was the president of Ecopetrol. So big names, right? Mm-hmm. And then my uncle, which wanted to revolutionize politics in Colombia, a great and outstanding man. And he wanted to do so much, and he was caught so short when he was in his 40s, horribly short by awful people. Mm-hmm. And it created like this compromise by this family of us that we needed to follow that legacy in order to transform Colombia somewhere or another and fight narcotráfico and fight all these horrible forces in Colombia that prevents Colombia from achieving what we should be achieving. Anyway, this is why I created this artwork, which is The Weight of the Name, because this name, this massive legacy is a massive responsibility, privilege, so many things at the same time. Privilege, we have received so much, but had to pay so much because of that. And most people just talk about the privilege, which is true. I'm not going to lie. We have received countless privileges because of that massive name, but it's a massive responsibility. And it has been a massive weight as well, and for so many cases, which is why I made a picture of him in a silver gelatin, in a metal that weighs 120 kilos. And it looks incredibly light, because if you look at the sculpture, because it's metal and it's steel, it's very thin. So people might think, oh, you know what? This is very thin, as is the name. You know, it looks very thin. It doesn't look that it weighs so much. But then if you try to lift it, it's incredibly heavy. Yeah, and I think it presents the perfect metaphor for what I feel this name represents for me personally.
And of course, this is Carlos Galán. Carlos?
Luis Carlos Galán.
Luis, yes. Carlos Galán, and he was gunned down in Soacha.
Soacha, yeah.
And it was Pablo Escobar's
name. Among others.
Among others. So let's not go further into that. But as you say, the responsibility, people will talk about, you know, the sort of humility, people will talk about the privilege and so on. But that word, the responsibility of having that name everywhere you go, the Galán name, which might have a lot to do with you being in London, you know. Yes. But at the
absolutely
same time,
running away from that. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah.
Well, you're not running away. You've made a life. There's no running away if you've made a life. So that's to me is very different, because, you know, people could say that I ran away, but no, I've made a life. So it's
No, exactly. Yes. And it was my choice, and I didn't come as a
asylum or a refugee or.
No, not at all. No. It was my own choice to be here, and I made a life, like you just said. Exactly. Yeah. Got married with a British guy, so nothing to do with that.
Oh, I'm sorry that you have to suffer us as well. But I'm sure you seem happy. But that piece of art, I've seen it because I have obviously done my research, and I am interested in it. And so down the line, listeners, you know, hopefully I might pick up that piece of art. I don't know how I get it back to Colombia, but I think it does belong in Colombia.
It should be in Colombia. I think it would be best there. And I think it's an artwork that it evolves over time, because in a way, because I use silver gelatin over metal, it will continue to corrode, which I think it will continue to give a different nuance to the reading of the work here.
And it represents something in Colombia. I mean, that's the other thing. So in your study in London, it's, you know, an engraving in the corner.
Yes, and in a way it has a different context, but it also gave me a beautiful reading about it, because I had to show it here. And of course, here people don't know this story or the history. And I think it was beautiful to share that story and that history here with my British colleagues and art colleagues here and the public here. And it was beautiful because in order to give it a bit of context, I showed his speeches. And my uncle was a vastly good public speaker. And he contained everyone with what he was saying. But unfortunately, here, the history of good public speakers in politics is stained by a particular history of a German great outstanding public speakers, and it was very interesting to read that and how by me showing that people couldn't escape from that history in the reading of this work, which gave it a completely different tone because obviously I didn't want it to do that, but it's inevitable, and it made me see how important it is to, or not how important, how beautiful it is to change context when you show a work of art. If you locate it differently, it will be read differently, which is beautiful. And I think it gives it a different reading and different context. And it was a good exercise for me to do here as well.
I think that's amazing because it is incongruous in London. You know, it is an incongruous piece of art. And of course, you know, it means something living here and having studied it and having read and everything else. And it means something very different to me here. I'm fascinated by this. I think anecdotally that more people should know about this history, those who are Latin Americanists or who have an interest in it, because it plays so much into what is happening now. Everything in Colombia is connected to politics. That's the absolute truth of it. And we'll get into the way that art is connected to this and the conflict and so on. But anecdotally, that a friend of mine in Canada was watching Narcos. You know, Narcos is not designed for you. It's not designed for me because we know, and you live it. And I probably know too much about this sort of thing. But that a friend in Canada was watching it and then got in touch to say, I'd never heard about this Galán figure. And that for me was like, well, that's a positive.
Yeah.
Someone, and honestly, has come
out. To be honest, one of the reasons that this work came to be as well was because it was parallel to the launch of Narcos here.
Ah, so
this is
good.
How old this piece is. Well, how old? It's not old, but it's sort of like a few years back, right? Mm-hmm. And it was one of the things that frustrated me the most is that in that show, in Narcos, it shows as if Gaviria was the one writing his speeches. And that I took personal, you know, like I said to myself, no, this is so wrong. Like one of the highlights of my uncle was his ability at public speaking. And the fact that they say that Gaviria wrote his speeches as if the brains behind the operations were Gaviria, for me, I was like, what? No, this is not true. So it made me realize that, of course, when you have a name, a certain persona is built around you. And in a way, this is the paradox of the artwork that I wanted to make, precisely to demystify this persona and how that persona affected everyone surrounding that name, you know, surrounding this idea and how we live through that. That's the beauty of it. So this is why
I'm curious. A totally tangent there. I'm curious as to why Gaviria has so much authority. I'm curious, even, you know, today as well, he's the one, I mean, by the time this comes out, possibly the Reforma de Salud has collapsed because of Gaviria's machinations. You know, it's like, whether you support it or not, there's Gaviria. And I mean, basically,
incredibly smart and intelligent.
Yes. Didn't write those speeches. I mean, he didn't write those speeches. We know that. And for me, he has damaged almost irreversibly the Liberal Party's reputation as a great historic party in Colombia. But let's not get into that. But as I said, politics and Colombia are, you know, very much everything is political. And that's why I wanted to get into the art side of things here, because for me, there is a generation of artists that obviously have been, and rightly so very much defined by the conflict and politics in Colombia, even, you know, up to present day. And we talk about Doris Salcedo and so on. You talked about Deborah Arango with me.
But it's funny that you say that, because I think there have been many generations. Mm-hmm. Because Deborah Arango was way before Doris Salcedo. I think during the time of the violence in Colombia, the period like La Violencia, during the 40s and 50s, that was a generation way before this one that you're referring with the Doris Salcedo and Oscar Muñoz, for example, other great artists that came after. And I think it was like the Guarango's generation, like alongside someone like Pedro Nel Gómez, who was one of the first muralists in Colombia. I think they were also committed to showcasing what was happening in terms of political turmoil that they were living then, because I think in Colombia we have suffered so many violent periods that we cannot mix, you know, like the violence periods was horrible, and then came the drug dealers and Pablo Escobar that came in the 80s, but they were sort of separated. And in between, paradoxically, there was a period of sort of apolitical artists, in a sense, which is not apolitical, and I don't know if they were completely apolitical, but they were, some of them were purposely apolitical, and they were venturing towards like more geometric abstraction, and it's the generation of Negrete and Ramírez Villamizar, a series of sculptures that delve into geometric abstraction in order to, in a way, distance oneself from this political theme. And I start to sense, and this is something that I do want to research further, if there has been like sort of a pendulum of political theme in Colombian art history during the 20th century. Artists approaching and leaving the violent, like the political theme in and out, precisely due to everything that the country was living throughout the 20th century.
Do you feel that there's these artists are saying it's a fatigue of let's say what they're living, or a self-censorship?
I have no idea. I think it's might be a mixture of both, also in order to think of something else. Like, I think, for example, the generation that came after Doris Salcedo and Oscar Muñoz and all these series of artists that were based on what the political situation was we were living in Colombia. I think the generation that came after, that probably as a generation closer to my age, I think they went towards different themes precisely because we were so overwhelmed by that before, you know? And in a way, we weren't going to follow to the same steps as that previous generation. So I think there was a break from that. But I wonder if that's, again, the pendulum going back and forth.
So what are we in now then? What would you say, 2023? What stage of the pendulum?
I think I need to research more of the Colombian side, guys. I don't know. But I feel like contemporary artists in Colombia are looking broader and delving into different themes, including the environment, that has a political connotation, but not from necessarily a political connotation. You know what I mean? Because, I think they are delving into various themes that have to do more with, like, for example, invading or traveling to other planets, to venturing your mind into something else, you know? So maybe I think it's something broader, wider. And this is why one of our purposes with Amalgama is trying to break the narratives that Latin America has been immersed into, one of which is politics, you know, like an activism, and saying like, yes, we have delved into that, but that is not the only exclusive thing. And I think artists are trying to push to other limits, exploring and researching other concepts that are also fascinating. And I think this is where, in my perspective, Colombian art is heading towards.
So if we take Colombia and then we take the rest of the region, because that's Amalgama, would you say then, would you refer to a certain maturity in the art world then? Because, there have been the artists who focus or are doing sort of allegorical imagery or sculpture related to the conflicts or the political disturbances, because you've got people, you know, I can't name people in Brazil, but of course you have a heavy history there. And of course in Argentina, of course in every Latin American country, Pinochet, era Chile. If people are exploring different things, do you feel it's a new generation saying, well, you know, I haven't lived that period, so I would like to now explore other things rather than paint or make sculptures or explore periods that my parents or my relatives have lived through? Do you feel that there's something there?
Perhaps. I wouldn't say it's maturity, because I think each period had its own maturity, you know, like they were in order, like they were all doing their best to try to understand the environment that they were at. Mm-hmm. And I think right now there are so many other complexities that I feel the artists are now delving into, like, for example, the pandemic and like the overload of information, globalization, colonialism, like there are so many other things going on at the same time. And so artists are doing, in my perspective, their best in order to navigate that zeitgeist and speak what it relates to them. And I think there are so many, it's impossible to pinpoint this is the thing for me, you know, because at the same time, there are so many languages so diverse within the art world, within Latin America, that it's impossible to say, okay, this is exactly what they are doing right now. In each country, I think.
I don't think we'd be able to, I don't think we'd be able to pinpoint it, as you say. I don't think so. But I like the idea of the pendulum. I like the idea of that. It's very, very visual idea. So therefore we can see it. But so tell me, that brings us to, you know, guys, you've been listening to Daniela Galán. Listen, I mean, there's an expertise here that seems unrivaled, in my opinion. So Daniela is offering online courses. Tell us about it.
So yeah, it started because of the pandemic. Honestly, this is started because of the pandemic. And at the beginning, there were just webinars because I just wanted to talk about artists. Basically, I just wanted to share my passion of why I thought these artists were so great. And because I was shocked that most of the people that I knew had nothing, like had no idea who they were, why they were important. Even icons of art history, people were like, what? Who are they? No idea. And so I was like shocked and baffled. So at the beginning, there were just webinars that I started doing. Then I decided to do, okay, I'm going to try to do a brief history of art of the first half of the 20th century, because honestly, there is so much to talk about that if I talk the entire 20th century, my brain will explode.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, I'm just going to try to do a brief history, 6 webinars and explain it. But then I said to myself, okay, I've realized that because I'm here in the UK, my purpose was to target not just Latin Americans interested in learning about Latin America, but everyone, and realize how important these artists were for art history in general. So I realized I cannot do webinars because the time difference is insane. Some people in Latin America might want to listen to that. And so I thought, okay, now I'm going to record and talk chapters about this artist. And I wanted to give the opportunity for our audience to choose the artist that they wanted to learn about. So we have created an academy, sort of, where people can study by artist, by theme, or the entire art history course. And and of course, because Amalgama is mainly focused on women and artists, despite that, I also study male artists because, of course, history was built by both. And I think the contribution of both genders have been important. But of course, my focus is also artists that have not been as highlighted as people should have.
Yeah.
And another point that for me was also very important is to do it in both English and Spanish, because I wanted people that wanted to learn the language and also practice their language in both languages they could study. And I realized that the people that were taking my webinars, because I was doing them bilingually as well, the ones that were taking the English class were Spanish speakers, and the ones that were taking the Spanish class were English speakers. And I was like, this is insane. Why is it? So I decided to do both. And this is what we have done.
So it's an art history language course.
Absolutely. Yes. It's an art history language course. I should sell it like that.
But I like it very much. And that's very exciting to have that and have that dynamic as well, because someone who's learning Spanish and of course taking your art history course is going to come with a different vocabulary and a different emphasis and vice versa. Yeah. And so you have webinars that you record And I know that there's various
they are no longer webinars. Now I've written the class.
Okay.
Because one of the things that I've realized that art history, usually, because I have tons of art history DVDs, I don't know, where you listen to the story of, I don't know, very important European artists like Van Gogh, let's say. A lot of them were very boring.
Yes.
I have to admit, like a lot of them were very heavy and art history, if you read it as well, and I love the academics, I'm an academic myself, but they tend to use words that in my perspective alienate more than help people navigate through wonderful artists. Mm-hmm. So I decided against it. And I decided that I wanted to tell a story. So each chapter is a story of that artist studying both their lives and their artistic contributions. But I also take time to analyze specific artworks in detail. So mm-hmm. I go into the artwork and say, and highlight the parts that I think that are important. Mm-hmm. But, and I mix it with their life story. Because for me, for example, one of the most important thing that I've learned this year is that we are built on relationships. No one is a genius. No one. Everybody is a genius because of who they talk to, how they approach each other, the conversations and dialogues. And it was through those dialogues that great artwork was created. Mm-hmm. I feel like Picasso could have never been Picasso if he didn't have the friends that he had. if he wasn't surrounded by the people he was surrounded with. And I think those dialogues is what made him a genius. And mm-hmm. the same with all these various artists. They were all friends and they talked to one another. So I want to highlight those relationships that made them who they are because they learn from each other. And so I think that was a key thing for me to share in this course.
Well, I think, you're talking, if we put it into literature and art, of course, the Grupo Barranquilla, you're putting it, I agree, when you read about sort of Gertrude Stein and all the different people around the Hemingway, etc., around them in Paris, that was a creative commune almost.
Exactly.
They were bouncing ideas off one another. Of course it was. So I think that's very cool. And therefore you are taking what could be very dry, academic, and inaccessible, spicing it up, but making it far more enjoyable. I've had people on the podcast before who are, academics who almost refusing to write academic literature because they want to get it out there. And I'm very much of that school myself. Well, I'm also lazy. I don't want to write academic literature because you get it sent back 40 times by the editor. And I'm no more.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you need to decide who is your reader or therefore your audience. Mm-hmm. And I don't want my reader to be just academics talking to each other and celebrating their new made up word. No, I want to be regular people interested in understanding why these artworks are important and mm-hmm. why they should love it or they should stop and look at it or try to understand it. Because mm-hmm. of course, like a lot of it is inspired by my family that says to me, I don't get why this artist is important. Her work is horrible. And I was like, well, that's the point. She wanted to make it horrible. And anyway, I just want to highlight why we need to stop for a moment and look at this piece of artwork and say, okay, there is something of value here. Mm. Why is that? Why does it have that value? So that was my, and for example, just to give you an example, I don't know if you're watching Netflix right now, and there's a series called Transatlantic, where it talks about the group that Varian Fry, which was a journalist, he created an emergency committee or rescue committee in order to help intellectuals and writers and painters escape from the war during World War II, right? Mm-hmm. And so he helped André Breton, he helped Chagall, he helped Duchamp, he helped all these great artists. But honestly, in this show, they forgot to mention the Latin Americans that he also helped. So for example, he helped Wilfredo Lam, who was in that Villa Herbelle. He helped Remedios Varo. So all these anecdotes I also tell in the course, because again, if it wasn't because of their friendship, a lot of these artists would have died. Mm. So I think the power of of intellectual friendship and dialogue helps the artistic creation. And I think it's beautiful just to point that out.
Well, I think you're onto a topic that Latin America gets left behind so often in this kind of thing, you know, and why can't, you know, okay. I haven't watched that series. I have seen the ad for it, but I don't think I will watch it now because it will upset me. It's like I watched the one on Latin American rock, which, you know, that's more my thing. And I was listening to it, and Colombia just didn't get, I mean, we got a look in for Aterciopelado, and then you're just like, there's a lot more to it. Yeah. Oh,
but yeah, Ecchimosis.
Anyway. Yeah, Ecchimosis is one thing. Juan is, please no. Well, anyway, I'll alienate.
When Juan is had long hair.
Yeah, when he did real music and not pop. Yeah. But let's not say that. I'll alienate my listeners for saying that and anyone in Medellin. But that said, I was just like, okay, you know, we don't need to focus only on Mexican and Argentine rock. But anyway, that's what happens. So, tell me quickly, if I were to sign up and my listeners were to sign up, what would the course look like?
So it depends. You can choose whether you want to learn, for example, I want to learn about the Orarango. So you can just purchase that class. And when you purchase that class, you have access to it in English and Spanish because everything is sold bilingually. Mm-hmm. Or you can say, for example, right now we have a short course that is called Latin American Surrealism ? Because I deeply emphasize on the fact that they were not surrealists, but they created a new movement altogether. Never mind. But where you can study, for example, the work of Débora Arango, that so often she has been read as surrealist. Well, anyway, and other artists like Wilfredo Lam and Frida Kahlo and Remedios Varo and Leonora Carrington. They are included into this short course, so you can also purchase that. And again, if you are one of your listeners, with the code Colombia Calling at the end of at checkout, you get a discount. You get a 5% discount, so it's great. Or if you want, you can purchase the entire history course, which is a year long, and then you can get all these information. And it's as simple as you get an email and you start watching, because all of them are videos of 15 to 20 minutes that you can watch comfortably. And I help you see the videos because I provide you with questions that help you like look at the video in detail and remember, okay, this is what I need to pay attention to. So it helps with the learning process because sometimes you get so much that you can say like, okay, but I help you navigate it by giving you questions that'll help you look at the videos calmly and you can watch them whenever you want. And then if you have questions, you can write us. There's a part there that it allows you to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And if you purchase the entire art history course, we have live Q&A sessions where you can meet me and ask questions again. So
that's the top tier. That's the top tier. It's time with Daniela Galán.
Exactly.
It's amazing. I think this is incredible. And I love it that it's born out of the pandemic. And of course, you know, just you doing webinars during the pandemic is something that obviously kept you sane. The podcast kept me sane during the pandemic.
Absolutely.
I was talking about this last night and everyone said, oh, during the pandemic, I became a voracious reader. I was like, that's because you didn't read before because you were at offices. For me, it flipped on its head. I couldn't focus on books. You know, I read a couple of books a week, and for me the pandemic came around and I couldn't focus on the words or what is home. So what was born of the pandemic and prior to that Amalgama is now, you know, this online amazing course. I mean, I'm actually interested, but I don't have time. Two children take up too much time, and I know I'm taking up your time because there's one small boy back there who's probably going to be clamoring for his mother. So people need to go to artamalgama.com. That's the website. I will put it obviously in the show notes.
Amalgama is like for the English speakers, it's right. It's like amalgamation. So artamalgama.com.
This will be in the show notes and it'll be put all over Facebook and Twitter and everything else. And then you can see art history courses, and there is the Amalgama Academy, and you can just go through, clicking through, and you'll find it. And at the end, put in Colombia Calling for a 5% discount. That's what it's all about, anyway. And just, you know, we've got to support one another. We've come out of a really hard time, and we've got to support one another. And we've all got different interests now. And pandemic, you know, in addition to growing mushrooms and baking sourdough, why not learn about art history and Latin American art as well? And, you know, enriching your life and becoming the most interesting person at every dinner party. That's the idea.
Absolutely. And this is why, even if you don't have time, you can just take one course, like you can just learn about one artist. That's why we did it the way we did it, because we know not a lot of people have the time to compromise to the entire art history course, which is why they think, okay, I just need to learn. Honestly, one of the reasons that I wanted to do it, because as a mother, you don't have time at all. So I thought, for example, for my own research as an artist, as an art historian, I wanted to create material that I could just listen to, that would be easy to listen to whilst I'm cooking or doing something with my child. And in a way, it can help me point where to research next, you know, because at the end of the day, this is the idea, is to open questions and to help people navigate more and continue to swim into the world of Latin American art.
The world of Latin American art. I like it. I like it. I think that sounds, this is a really nice moment, I think, to bring this to an end. So we're going to say it again, www.artamalgama.com. That's AMALGAMA. Go to Art History Courses, Amalgama Academy, click through, buy whatever you want, buy it all, buy the highest tier and get to meet Daniela Galán.
Absolutely.
So listen, Daniela, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for sharing something so profoundly personal about, you know, the weight of the name, because that really, you know, I could see it, you know, it changed the ambience of the podcast discussing that. There was a dip, but because it was emotional, and then we get back up again into your enthusiasm for the course and the artwork and what you're doing. So thank you for your time, and thank you for you know, obviously offering my listeners the 5% discount.
Of course, it was a pleasure. Thank you, Richard, for sharing this with us and helping us share our passion for Latin American artists.
Well, we have to, don't we? We have to, because it's so important. And like you said, you know, what's it called? Transatlantic, which doesn't do justice.
About us. It's terrible.
Yeah. But I always feel that Latin America is you know, sort of like the last on every list for some reason. Maybe it's because I live here and, you know, I'm biased. And, you know, we all have difficulty sort of selling our wares being from Latin America. You know, talk to a book editor, oh, we've done one book from Brazil this year. You're like, yeah, that's Brazil, you know.
I know.
It's like, but it, you know, they see the continent.
We have done
one.
Latin America.
Yeah, so we've done Latin America.
You say that to Europe. Yeah. We have done Europe.
We've done Europe. Yeah. You're like, oh, okay.
We have done Italy. Why the UK?
I think we could rant a little bit longer, but let's not. Listen, thank you again. This has been episode 466. Amalgama, Art Amalgama, all of the links will be found in the show notes, Facebook, Twitter, and beyond. Of course, thank you to our new Patreon supporters, patreon.com/Columbia Calling. You can help us out there. Thank you to Daniela Galán for her knowledge and her time. This has been episode 466. Please continue to subscribe, support, and share. And we will continue to broadcast great conversations with incredible people, just as Daniela Galán. So thank you for listening, everyone. And goodbye. The Columbia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Columbia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Columbia Calling website, that's www.columbiacalling.co, or the BNB Columbia Tours website, that's www.bnbcolombia.com, and they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolombia.com and Latin News. www.columbiacalling.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.